Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a Friday that will include Hall of Fame coach Jimmy Johnson and Blazing 5 live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, Fox Sports Radio right here on FS1. 1 hour from now, our Blazing 5. It is the biggest NFL weekend by far. We have classic rivalries, Rams, Niners, Browns, Steelers. We have iconic Hall of Fame-level quarterbacks meeting. Brady and Rodgers, and Joy Taylor looks like she's on Broadway today. Look at Joy Taylor. Oh, my God.
I feel like this is a Friday dress.
It is.
It's like a New Year's
it
dress.
It is Uptown Joy Taylor.
The truth is, it was stretchy, and I didn't feel like being uncomfortable.
You do not look like a Pittsburgh girl this morning. It's great to have you in. So I just want to talk about two games to start. The two biggest games of the weekend to me, the two I can't wait to watch. These are five soup games. I want to start with the Tampa Bay, Green Bay, Tom Brady against Aaron Rodgers. So change is really hard. Most Americans, they do studies on this, don't want to change. We like habits. Most Americans have jobs they have conquered, they have figured out, and they're not challenged. But the money's okay, and change stinks. You got to move offices, move bosses, change cultures, change cities. So most people in their lives stay in jobs that are beneath them. They're no longer challenged by. They're certainly smart enough. People are certainly capable, but change is hard. And Tom Brady not only left a job he had kind of mastered, but the best system in the league, and he chose Tampa. Largely loose, not buttoned up, dysfunctional organization. And he knew it was hard. He knew it was a new system. And he knew they lacked discipline. And he knew Bruce Arians wasn't Bill Belichick. But I think it's been harder than Tom thought. Because Joy and I were on the news back in like March or April when the story broke. In fact, we broke it, Tom, to the Buccaneers. And we thought COVID would be done by June or July. And it's still a pandemic, and the numbers are rising, and Tom Brady thought he was going to get an OTA. He thought he was going to get a preseason. He thought most of his young players don't get hurt as much. They'd always be available. They're not. Again this weekend. Light practices, players hurt. Tom Brady is aspirational, and people that are take chances and take jobs that are challenging. But Tampa Bay's offense doesn't do anything well. They're 21st in yards per play. They're 21st in third down conversion. And if you've watched their offense this year, it's looked clunky. It's hard. It looks like it's hard. It's undisciplined. 25 offensive penalties. And then here comes Green Bay. It has looked easy. They are top three in third down conversion. They are top three in protecting the quarterback. They are number one in yards per play. So when you've got a big game and two great players and one, we said this with LeBron and AD this year, the chemistry just looked easy. I probably should have picked up on this earlier. The chemistry for the Clippers always looked hard. And in the end, the team where the chemistry just fit and it worked and it was easy ended up winning the championship. If you've watched Green Bay this year, and they haven't played very good at defenses. I mean, they played sort of weaker defenses. But it's looked easy. It's not just winning. It looks like they're happy. They're functional. Davante Adams is healthy. And for Tampa Bay, it has just looked hard. And Tom loves challenges. But I think this is tougher than he thought. The injuries, no OTAs, no preseason. Lack of discipline has been alarming. And Brady talks about facing Aaron, who always makes it look so smooth.
I think there's a lot to like about his play and his ability to pass football. He's, I think everybody always is pretty much in awe of how he makes it look so easy. Just the throwing motion, the velocity on the ball, the placement of the ball. He's, you know, one of the great quarterbacks ever played the game.
Tom needs for Aaron Rodgers to not make it look easy. This game could be a blowout, It is all the Fox promos are Aaron against Tom. No, it's really Aaron Rodgers against Tampa Bay's defense. The only way Tampa Bay wins this weekend, if it's a little ugly for Aaron, if there's pressure on him, and if the defense carries him. Because Tom likes challenges, and when he signed with Tampa, he thought he was getting an OTA, a preseason, and young players who generally stay healthier than old players. None of those have transpired, and I like the Packers this weekend. Here is the other game I'm really interested in. Cleveland, this is the best they've been since Belichick. And they face the Steelers. And teams and coaches tell you what they think of their quarterbacks by what they allow them to do. Mike Zimmer does not allow Kirk Cousins to do much. He's telling you what he thinks of Kirk Cousins. And Kevin Stefanski is telling you what he thinks of Baker Mayfield. They are number one in running the football. And secondly, multiple times this year, on big plays offensively, they've let receivers throw the ball downfield. He's telling you he doesn't trust Baker Mayfield to carry them. And why should he? After all these games this year, five games, we have a pattern. Game one, they let Baker throw 37 times. They were blown out. Games two, three, and four, they allowed him to throw 23, 23, and 30. They looked good in all of them. Last week, they threw a lot in the second half, 37 attempts, and Baker almost blew it. That should have been a blowout and not competitive. Kevin Stefanski is telling you what he thinks of Baker. He's limited. Pro Football Focus has him rated as the second lowest graded offensive starter for the Cleveland Browns. Only a rookie left tackle who's a poor run blocker is lower. And Greg Cosell came on this week and said, despite the glossy 4-1 record, here's what the film says on Baker.
I quite honestly don't believe Baker Mayfield has played that well. I think Baker is playing a little fast, both mentally and physically. I think he needs to slow down his entire process. He's a very talented kid. I think he's got a really good arm. We've seen him be exceedingly accurate throughout his career at times. But I think that for them to get to where they believe I'm sure they can get to, he's going to have to play a lot better than he's playing now.
And what do the Pittsburgh Steelers do really well? They make you play fast. They've got the best pass rush. They lead the NFL in sacks with 20 and hits with 70. And they're going to make Baker Mayfield play very, very fast. And PFF and Greg Cosell and people that look at film tell you when he plays fast, he's not very good. That's why Stefanski has the Browns as the number one run ratio team in the league, and why he is this year more than once asked his wide receivers to make big throws downfield in big spots of games. Coaches tell you what they think of their players by what they allow them to do and not allow them to do. Stefanski, ideally against Pittsburgh, would love to run the ball 30 to 45 times. And he's not going to be able to because nobody's going to run the ball successfully 40 times on the Steelers this year. I like Pittsburgh and Green Bay, two favorites this weekend. And I generally like underdogs. So a lot of different stuff on a Friday. Dodgers continue to melt down. You know, it's interesting. Here in Los Angeles, where Joy and I live, Broadway star Joy Taylor, that we've had a lot of successful teams lately. The Lakers won the championship. The Clippers were very good. Outside of the hockey team in this town, everybody's kind of winning, and the Dodgers are. But, you know, it's interesting with winning is that Clayton Kershaw, who is beloved in Los Angeles, again last night melted down, and it was fascinating to watch Dodger fans fight amongst themselves last night. He never gets support from the offense. He never gets support from the manager. They didn't pull him fast enough. Here's all I know. His regular season ERA, 2.4. His postseason ERA, closer to 4.4. That's the data. You can keep arguing about it, but we have seen this in the NBA and we see it with baseball. Some people are built for regular season. Some people slightly unravel in the postseason. Westbrook, we've seen that. Harden, Clayton Kershaw is not the same pitcher in the postseason. That is indisputable. He's just not.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Here's a rumor that's very interesting. Chris Paul, we thought his career was done. Clippers, people were disappointed. Goes to Houston, really good. Gets hurt, it's over. Goes to Oklahoma City. Wow, shocking team of the year. But Chris Paul's always loved Los Angeles, reportedly wants to come back, wants to leave Oklahoma City. And the Lakers are interested, and Chris Paul wants to play with LeBron James. 2 years left on his deal, $85 million. What do the Lakers care? They just want one title in 2 years, and they just won a title many are surprised by. You'd have to give up Danny Green, Kyle Kuzma, Avery Bradley, and Quinn Cook. Here's why I love this. Remember this. Championship teams need to always tweak. They need to add juice and energy. And I was reading a business book earlier this year. And they said, what kills every great company is always the same thing. It's arrogance. It's this belief we've got it figured out, we've got it solved, that even when you're a championship team, it is the easiest time to sell to your employees a tweak. Because the bosses have to be smart. You just had great earnings. It's very difficult to take your staff, to take your team when you're struggling and say, all right, this didn't work. We're going to try something new. That's tough. But when you're a champion and you tweak, there's an understanding with employees. Oh, they know what they're doing. They just let us do a championship. Michael Jordan's Bulls, the first three-peat and the second three-peat, they were different teams. The Warriors, they add Shane Battier. They win a title. Then they add Ray Allen. They kept adding juice. The Warriors had won a title loss. They bring in KD. They win a couple of titles. They bring in DeMarcus Cousins. The Lakers need juice. That's not that they're not good, but remember, they flew through Portland and flew through Houston, and they frankly flew through Denver, and they ended up beating Miami by like 30 points or 20 points, although it was a blowout. You have got to add a dimension to this team, something else, and now is the time, and Chris Paul is the perfect fit. Number one, super high IQ basketball player. LeBron has no interest teaching you how to play basketball. This is a high-functioning IQ basketball team. LeBron, the center of it. Adding Chris Paul makes a lot of sense. Secondly, like Miami with LeBron, this is a market that is attractive to free agents. You start adding Chris Paul and LeBron, Anthony Davis, that's a championship team. You will attract older players who have made their money and only thing missing is a ring. That's how you get like a Shane Battier. That's how you get like a Warriors can get a guy that will take a little less. So I think the Chris Paul Laker rumors are real. Chris Paul loves L.A. LeBron loves smart veteran players. And by the way, the Western Conference is all about guards. Who's the emerging stars? Devin Booker and Jamal Murray, guards. What does Chris Paul do? Play defense. If you really look at the number one threat next year to the Lakers, it's not the Clippers. It's probably the Warriors. What are they built on? Stephen Clay, backcourt. A stingy, tough, physical guard in Chris Paul, veteran, high basketball IQ, is a perfect fit for the Lakers.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Let's go to Albert Breer, senior NFL reporter, lead content strategist, Monday morning quarterback, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing. So, you know, it is interesting. Every Fox promo, it's Brady against Rodgers. But I really think it is Rodgers against Tampa's defense, because Tom Brady knew this was going to be difficult, Albert. He did. Mm-hmm. He's an old guy. It's a new offense. But he didn't predict no OTAs. He didn't predict no preseason. He didn't predict this many injuries to skill people. And they're not doing outside of the red zone. They're not very good offensively. Do you believe that it's a little more right now than Tom thought he'd have to dig himself out of?
Yeah, I think to some degree, Colin, Tom's learning how the other 31 live. You know, the Patriots are so buttoned up and such a like tight operation. You don't have things like jumping offsides on fourth down. You don't have things like blocked punts. You don't have things like fumbled kickoffs. Those things generally don't happen in New England, and you won't see those things happen multiple times in a game ever with the Patriots. And so I think there's been an adjustment from that standpoint for Tom Brady, no question about it. You know, and they're dealing with the injuries, which, you know, that's just more bad luck than anything. But yeah, I mean, I think there's an element of this that has taken some getting used to. And I think before that Bears game, to be honest with you, we started to see signs of what it could be with Brady getting a little bit more comfortable getting the ball downfield. I think a little bit of a regression on a short week against the Bears, but there are some signs that it's coming along. And I do think, you know, like you said, he's playing with an awfully good defense. That Bucs defense has been playing well going back to the end of last year under Todd Bowles.
So Baker Mayfield will face the best defense he has faced so far this year. Pro Football Focus has Baker as the second lowest graded offensive player for the Browns. Last week, again, when they ran it early against the Colts, he was terrific. Second half, they asked him to throw more. He got loose and actually kept that game close. Is it fair to me to, I think that the Baker season's been a little bit of a mirage, that it's, they're trying to become a run team. And when they've been forced to throw it, it's kind of gotten ugly so far for Baker.
Well, I think to some degree, the coaches there are trying to rebuild Baker a little bit. And I'm not saying he needs a complete overhaul, but I know one of the focuses there, they wanted him to play calmer. They wanted him to play a less frantic game. And, to be fair to Baker, like that sort of style of play really worked for him at Oklahoma. But, you know, they wanted him to sort of settle down. And the best way to do that was to establish the running game. And they've started to see signs that he's getting there. But this was always going to be a process, you know, and I think that they felt like coming in, establishing the Shanahan run game was going to be huge for him. And so being able to do that behind Nick Chubb before he got hurt, now Kareem Hunt, and fixing the offensive line were job number one.
Yeah.
And that's why I think Baker's best friend has been Bill Callahan, the offensive line coach, who wherever he goes, and you can look it up, Washington, Dallas, wherever he's been, he gets there, the offensive line's fixed, the run game's fixed. And so I think so much of this was about getting Baker to settle down and doing that through the run game. And I think now that they've established that to some degree, they can start to build Baker back up, which was part of the plan all along.
You know, people will bristle at this, and I do like Dak over Andy Dalton, but we forget now that Andy Dalton is 32 years old. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he's got he could absolutely, if he flourishes here in Dallas, there may be teams that say in the next year, we'd like to offer him some money. I think in Cincinnati, I said this yesterday, when he was asked to be a pass-first point guard, to distribute the ball in those first 4 years in Cincinnati, he was actually very effective. That, I think that's what he's going to be asked to do in Dallas. Now, I think Dak's better, but I think we're being hyperbolic saying the gap is large. I mean, you talk to I think Andy Dalton with this offense can be a very highly functional player. Your thoughts?
I mean, I talked to Stephen Jones about this 2 days ago, and he said that they felt incredibly fortunate based on the way the quarterback market went for the first time in forever. There was more supply than demand out there. They felt incredibly fortunate that they were able to get Andy Dalton under the circumstances they wound up getting him. And you're right. 5 years in a row, Colin. 5 years in
five.
A row in Cincinnati. He brought them to the playoffs,
yep.
Right? Now, I know they didn't win when they got there, but you got to be pretty good to get him there. And what you saw in Cincinnati, I think, is exactly who he is. He's an incredibly effective bus driver. When you give him a good environment to operate in, he can do it. When he had A.J. Green and Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu, and the tackles were Andrew Whitworth and Andre Smith, he was a really good quarterback.
Yep.
What happens when the offensive line crumbles? Well, then he crumbled a little bit. So, you know, I think as much as anything else, the really interesting part about this, Colin, to me, this gives the Cowboys a great chance to assess the rest of their roster. Because if you're good around Andy Dalton, I think he's going to be just fine. They've paid a lot of guys in that roster. Obviously, Amari Cooper, Ezekiel Elliott, the offensive line, they've invested a ton up there. This is going to give them a really good chance to kind of assess how good the rest of their team is. Because if you're good around Andy Dalton, I think he's shown he can do it.
So the Chiefs add Le'Veon Bell. There's some Gen X stats that say he's shot. He was McCaffrey before McCaffrey. He's a great pass catcher out of the backfield. And I think he made a really smart decision to go to a highly functional, stable organization from the Jets. That's why I never liked when he left the Steelers. Do you think he's shot? What do your sources say? I think as a red zone weapon, I think he could be really interesting for the Chiefs.
I think he has something left. I think so much of it about it for him is like he's going to sort of go the way the wind blows him. So if he's in a good environment, like he'll go that way. If he's in a bad environment, he's going to be a problem. And so I think that's sort of what you saw over the last couple of years with the Jets. I don't think he's what he was 4 years ago when he was averaging 4.9 yards a carry. That said, the Chiefs can really use him. They missed Damian Williams in short yardage close to the goal line. Here's the other thing. They love Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and they believe in Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But if you look at Clyde Edwards-Helaire's history, he really only had 1 year as the bell cow at LSU, and that was with all these great things going on around him. And so to ask him to be that guy in year one in the NFL, I think was always a little bit much. And so now what can they do? Now they can pace him a little bit more. And now this is going to allow them to get more out of their first-round pick when you get to December and January, when you'd be worrying about him hitting that rookie wall if you were really taxing him. Now you can pull back a little bit on him and maybe get a little bit more from him when you get to the playoffs.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. Albert Breer joining us. So I said this week, Alex Smith will win comeback player of the year. I'll give Cam Newton comeback player of the year. I think he's been terrific, and I've been a doubter forever. And then he got COVID, and I thought, oh, brother, oh, don't lose, Bill. Don't lose the locker room on this. Just don't. And then I thought to myself, I wonder if, you know, Bill, his tolerance for stuff like that with veterans is pretty low. Did he lose any equity in the locker room? Is everybody still all in on Cam Newton in New England?
Yeah, I think that they are. You know, I look, this isn't just a one-year thing, too. I mean, his history, if you really dig into it and you talk to people in Carolina, he was actually a really good locker room guy there. Like, if you talk to the Greg Olsons, the Ryan Khalils, the Thomas Davises, the Luke Kuechlys, the guys who were foundation pieces with him in Carolina, they all love him. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that the Patriots look at Cam Newton as a guy who potentially could be their quarterback for the next 3, 4, 5 years, and at the very least could be somebody who helps them get to the next guy, sort of the same way that Alex Smith was for the Kansas City Chiefs and getting them to Patrick Mahomes. And the Patriots are in an interesting spot now. I actually think, Colin, and this is sort of an interesting twist, the Dwayne Haskins benching in Washington could reverberate in New England. Before, you were sort of wondering, where's the market for Cam Newton going to be after the season? Now, Washington's future at quarterback looks wide open. Their head coach is Ron Rivera. Their offensive coordinator is Scott Turner. And now the Patriots actually have something to worry about as far as where Cam Newton could go after the year. And so I think this storyline only gets more interesting as we go on.
Yeah, I said this to Joy this week. I'm not there yet, but I'm close. If Cam beats Denver, if Cam for the next 2 weeks plays really well, and I feel like, okay, I've got a new guy here, do they sit down and just offer him and just say, listen, here's a 2-year deal. We may draft a quarterback, Cam. We're going to try to. Mm-hmm. But for 2 years, we're building around you. Do you think they would start talks in a couple of weeks if he flourished against, let's say, Denver this weekend?
I wouldn't be surprised if they did what they did with Jimmy Garoppolo. And Jimmy Garoppolo, before they traded him, they'd offered him like a fair kind of bridge deal. And he turned it down, and he wound up winning in that scenario, became a starter in San Francisco, got paid there. But it wouldn't surprise me if they offered him some sort of bridge deal that sort of takes care of him the next few years, gets him some money early, takes some of that injury risk that he's facing the rest of the year off of his plate. And I think it would make all the sense in the world to do that, Colin, for a couple different reasons. Number one, the cap's going to go down next year because of the revenue shortfall. So if you can dump some money into this year, where you still have some cap space and they still have like between $25 and $30 million in cap space, I think you do it. And then it allows you to sort of plan fiscally around Cam for the next few years. And again, I think the Alex Smith comp in Kansas City is the right one, where it's, we're really happy with our quarterback right now, and maybe he's the long-term answer, and maybe he gets back to being MVP Cam. But at the very least, we've got a guy we're happy with for now that's going to help us get to the next guy.
That's why we bring him on. All sorts of good insight. Albert Breer, senior NFL guy, lead content dude, Monday morning quarterback. Have a great week. This is a really good NFL weekend.
That's right, yeah.
A lot of clarity this weekend. Thanks, Albert.
All right, thanks, Colin. Enjoy the weekend.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Ty Lue is going to just agree to a 5-year deal for the Clippers. And a story came out yesterday that, according to a report, that players like Patrick Beverley and Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams were not happy last year with Doc Rivers allowing Kawhi Leonard to get special treatment, miss a lot of practices, miss games, be late to flights. The issue here, and this is not going to change much, is that the Clippers were a bunch of underdogs. It's a bunch of Patrick Beverleys. It's a bunch of Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell. It's a bunch of underdogs, and that's what they created. And let's be honest about this. Kawhi Leonard is sort of odd. He's nonverbal. He's the only NBA star you're not sure if he's going to play. He's different. He's not real communicative. That's who he is. And we've said this before. We know that Russell Westbrook is intense. No coach has changed him. We know Ben Simmons is kind of aloof. No coach really changed him. What Kawhi Leonard is unique and nonverbal. And Greg Popovich struggled with it. And what was interesting is he was a mercenary in Toronto. He was just asked to come, score buckets, make defensive play. That's all he was asked. He was not asked to be a team leader. Be a mercenary. And he was great. And in San Antonio, he was not asked to lead the team. They had Duncan. They had veterans. They had Pop. They had Tony Parker. The challenge for Ty Lue is this player is now asked to be a leader and more verbal and more communicative. And that's not really what Kawhi Leonard is. That's not who he is. He's just a get a bucket, get a stop guy, and he's fantastic at it, as good as anybody in the NBA. But I do think there is a certain tension in this organization when your star is not overly communicative, is the only star in the league that wants lots of days off. I think that's a tense situation. I think it's like the Rams with Todd Gurley. There's a little walking on eggshells going on, and the locker room and the chemistry was not right. Now, can Ty Lue forge through that? Ty is very confrontational. Doc Rivers tends to he's more appealing to veterans. He'll appease veterans. Ty Lue won't. Ty will get after it. He'll argue with LeBron. He'll get right in his face. So I do think Jerry West talked Steve Ballmer into this hire. The owner wanted Jeff Van Gundy. Jerry West wanted, according to reports, Ty Lue. And I would guess one of the reasons Jerry West liked Ty Lue is Ty's a little more confrontational. He'll get after Paul George. He can get after a Kawhi Leonard and get right in his face and tell him what I need. And I think that's probably the remedy for what ails this franchise. They're still very good. But I've seen this a lot in pro sports, is that personalities are formed when you're kids. Like your personality is largely formed by the time you're 9 years old. You could go ask a child psychologist. What you are at 9 and 10, it's largely what you are, different variations of it. You're more mature, obviously, at 29 than 9. You know, your brain forms by 20, 21 years old. But at 9, your personality is largely formed. Hyper kids or hyper adults. You know, nervous kids are nervous adults. Talkers are talkers by 9. Nonverbal by 9. And I think Kawhi's a very unique personality. It's never going to be easy. There will be walking on eggshells. But I think Ty Lue is the kind of confrontational man that can make it work. And my guess is they won't be as disappointing next year.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Jimmy Johnson's got all sorts of courage, 2 Super Bowls, one of the best football coaches in the history of this country, college football national championship, Miami. He's now Fox Sports analyst, obviously, joining us live from the Keys in Florida. So, Jimmy, the worst situation for a coach is you lose your starting quarterback and you got to go to a backup. But I said this in the offseason. I thought Andy Dalton was a good pickup. He's a grown-up. He's from Texas. He's all in on the Cowboys. Would you, if you ran the Cowboys, would you lighten it up? Would you simplify it for him? Would you some of their skills are similar. Dak's, I think, a little better athlete. What do you do with a playbook now for Dalton?
Yeah, Colin, I think you adjusted a little bit, you know, but I felt like they needed to adjust it even when Dak was in there. They needed to do some things to protect that defense. That defense is really struggling. You know, they went from a 4-3 to a 3-4, and half the players really don't know what they're doing. And so the defense has struggled. And so how you protect the defense is you eliminate the negative plays and you increase your time of possession by running the football with Ezekiel Elliott. Now, I think Dalton, I think he'll be a perfect fit. In fact, he will help that defense. As long as he manages the game and utilizes that supporting cast, I think that they shouldn't miss a beat. And plus, they're in the NFC East. You know, if you were the quarterback for the Cowboys, you'd win the NFC East. So I think they're in good shape.
So Le'Veon Bell got picked up by the Chiefs. When you were coaching and you get a player, and Le'Veon may not be what he was 5 years ago, but he's got a skill set. Jimmy, he can catch the ball. This is a pretty good O-line. How much do you integrate him into the offense first week, second week, third week? Because he's a nice little red zone asset here. Would you slowly move him into the offense?
You know, Bell has been in the league long enough that he's going to be able to adjust to whatever Andy wants him to do. And you know, who's the best coach in the entire league as far as utilizing his talent? And it's Andy Reid. You know, Bell, you know, like you say, he's an outstanding receiver. You can split him out. You can do a lot of different things with him. Now, he's not going to be able to play in that first ball game, but you know, by the time he gets into the second ball game, into like a week and a half or so, you know, they'll have a package for Bell, and I think he'll do fine. I think, in fact, he'll do a lot better for them than what he was doing for the Jets, and it could be similar to what he was doing there with the Steelers.
So Packers-Bucks is the biggest game of the day, and the one reason I like Green Bay in this game, one of the reasons I like it, I think they're doing such a good job protecting Aaron Rodgers. He's not getting sacked. He's got that extra beat, that extra three-quarters of a second, and Tom's offensive line has been heavily penalized, and it just looks like they're a little out of sync. Now, Chris Godwin's supposed to play this week, and so he's fully practiced. So are you disappointed, or is Tampa offensively kind of where, Jimmy, you thought they'd be with no preseason?
I actually thought Tampa would be better than what they're playing right now. I think Brady is frustrated. You know, he's not converting on third down, but most of his third downs are third down and eight, third down and nine.
Right.
They're a sloppy, sloppy football team. You know, I've said for the last couple of years before Brady got there, I said Tampa was the most exciting bad team in the league. You know, here they led the league in offense, but they were horrible. You know, they turned the ball over too much, made too many mistakes. Now, Brady has elevated them. They're better now. But, you know, they still are a sloppy football team. Too many penalties, too many negative plays, too many third and longs. I just see, you know, the Packers being a better coach team right now.
Yeah.
Now, I will say this. I like their defensive coach. I think defensively, they really do a heck of a job.
Yeah, I like Todd Bowles, too. I think he's as good a coordinator right now as the league has. The Pro Football Hall of Famer Jimmy Johnson. It's interesting. You know, Brady comes from that sort of academic, rigid system in New England. Very intense. And Tampa's always been a little loose, and Bruce Arians a little loose, and Tom's yelling at teammates about 10 days ago, and it made a lot of news. I mean, Troy Aikman, you had him. He'd bark at guys. Dan Marino would bark at guys. I do worry a little bit that it's a young roster, Tom's an older player, and he's losing patience. Should I at all be worried that it got a little testy and talked about a little too long when he barked last week?
You know, Troy didn't bark until after I left. Yeah, you know, because he knew Barry wasn't going to bark, and somebody needed to bark at those players. I think, you know, just looking at Tom, he looks frustrated. He looks, you know, like, in fact, he made the comment after the ball game that, you know, so many third and eights, you know, it's hard to convert. And so, they are a talented enough team that they can win against anybody if things fall right for them. But because they're a sloppy team, they're not going to have the consistency of a champion.
Yeah.
And until they get that consistency, I'm going to be concerned about them.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I love Andy Reid, but there is something. Mahomes is facing more zone coverage this year, and he's struggling a little bit with it. He's struggling. And they've gotten into a bad habit of starting slow. And I think to myself, well, Andy Reid's a great play designer. Maybe he feels the game out. Pete Carroll can get into this, where Pete lets the game, he feels it out, and then he's a terrific halftime adjuster. Go back to your career. Did you ever have a team like the Chiefs that could start slow and you always felt like you were digging out of a hole a little bit? And how do you correct it if that ever becomes the case?
You know, I think Kansas City falls into the category of having success and maybe not being quite as hungry before they had the success. You know, the the biggest enemy of great is good. and they are very, very good. Now, when you're bad, you know, you put in the extra hours and you do whatever it takes to try to achieve, you know, success. But they've had so much success, it's, you know, it's almost like they're taking things for granted.
Yeah.
I know Terry Bradshaw asked me, he said, you know, you were a complete, you know, SOB to those players, you know, after that first Super Bowl. I said, yeah, and I was a bigger one the second Super Bowl. He said, if you had stayed with that veteran, you'd have lightened up, wouldn't you? I said, no, I would have been an even bigger one. You gotta push those players. The more success they have, the harder it is to push them, you know, to get to that pinnacle.
So I have to ask you, every coach has a strength. You had an eye for personnel that is second to none. You were an unbelievable recruiter, and you built a power at Miami, and it wasn't all five-star guys. It wasn't when you first got there. You built a power with some three-star guys. And I have to ask you, if the Jets or the Giants got the number one pick, and Trevor Lawrence is sitting out there, you're the GM of one of those teams. Do you move off a Jones or a Darnold this quickly? What do you do, Terry? Because I think that's what's going to happen here. The Jets are a bad, bad football team.
They are a bad football team, but you don't pass on a great, great quarterback. You know, if you're going to have the first pick in the draft, that means you're going to have the first pick in the second round as well, you know, and the third and the fourth. And so you take your Trevor Lawrence, and then – yeah, you maybe trade some other picks to try to build your team, but you don't ever bypass on a, you know, franchise outstanding quarterback like Trevor Lawrence.
Okay, and Aikman was like that, right? You with Troy Aikman, you felt you were getting.
Well, I felt that way. We had scouts that wanted to take Tony Mandridge. I mean, you know, people have selective amnesia. Right now, everybody says, "Oh, you know, for sure we're going to take Troy Aikman." You know, Troy didn't even make all Pac-10. You know, Rodney Pete was an all Pac-10 quarterback.
Wow.
So there were questions. There were questions on Troy. Now, there were no questions on my mind. I'd been, you know, recruiting Troy ever since he was a sophomore in high school. He was in my, you know, when he was a sophomore in high school, he came to my camp at Oklahoma State. We thought we had him signed at Oklahoma State, and then at the last weekend, he goes to Oklahoma. So I'd been working on Troy for a long time. I knew he was going to be our guy. But, you know, if you look back during that period of time, you know, there were a bunch of other players that were questioned whether or not, you know, they could be the number one pick. A lot of people wanted Mandridge.
Did you fire those scouts who wanted Mandridge?
To protect them, I wouldn't mention their name now.
I don't blame you. By the way, one college football question. So Nick Saban will not coach the game because he got COVID. Now, he was at Zoom practices. And it was so interesting, right. So interesting to me that even though he's got Steve Sarkisian, who's been a head coach twice, and he's got his defense installed for 10, 15 years, the game, the line moved a field goal, and I'm like, holy moly. Jimmy, when you were in a game, where would you have been missed as a head coach? What does a head coach do? Is it the halftime adjustment maybe that a coordinator couldn't do?
Well, you know, I think the head coach, you know, really in college and pro, his biggest impact is on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You know, it's during the week and preparing for the ball game. That's his biggest impact. The head coach on game day, you know, depending, you know, some head coaches call plays, which I don't agree with. Some coaches call defense. I don't agree with that either. Now, it's more, I think he has more impact in professional football. In college football, if you're at one of those top 10 schools, it's kind of like I said with you, you could be the quarterback for Dallas and you can still win the NFC East. If you're at Alabama, you know, and you were the head coach, you're still going to be right there winning 10 or 11 ball games.
Yeah. You never called plays once in your career. Even your first year at Oklahoma State.
Oh, you know, yeah. And actually, I called plays. I called defenses 3 or 4 years. I called offensive plays for 2 years at Oklahoma State. In fact, Ernest Anderson led the nation in rushing the year that I called plays at Oklahoma State.
Why'd you give it up?
I don't think that's the way to do it. I think you're a better head coach if you can delegate, you can oversee, You can have your hand in the offense, defense, and special teams. I spent more time, I was in all the special teams meetings. You know, I would pop in and out of the offensive and defensive meetings. I would sit in all the defensive meetings in preparing the game plan. You know, and so, yeah, if you are wrapped up, an offensive coordinator, his mindset is, you know, score. You know, he doesn't talk about, you know, managing the game, timeouts, you know, working the clock. He just wants to score. The defensive coordinator just wants to stop him. You know, he doesn't care about working the clock. The head coach has got to manage the game. He's got to tell the offensive coordinator, hey, start running the ball more. He's got to tell the defensive coordinator, blitz, hey, we can't give him any yardage here. You know, he's got to tell the special teams coach, hey, we're going to run a fake punt, you know, if we're not, if they don't make it this time. You know, I want the head coach to manage the game, you know, and manage, you know, clock management. I see games lost, Colin, every single weekend where the head coach did not manage the clock.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy.
Yeah. Boy, you gave Dave Wannstedt all that responsibility. Boy, that's a lot of responsibility to give Dave.
He was with me about 20 years, so he knew what I wanted to get done.
The Hall of Famer, Jimmy Johnson. Great seeing you, Coach.
Okay, Colin.